The Old Testament reading this morning is from Jonah, chapter 2, verses 1 to 19. Then Jonah prayed to the Lord his God from the belly of the fish, saying, I called to the Lord out of my distress, and he answered me. Out of the belly of Sheol I cried, and you heard my voice. You cast me into the deep, into the heart of the seas, and the flood surrounded me. All your waves and your billows passed over me. Then I said, I am driven away from your sight. How shall I look again upon your holy temple? The waters closed in over me. The deep surrounded me. Weeds were wrapped around my head at the roots of the mountains. I went down to the land whose bars closed upon me forever, yet you brought up my life from the pit. O Lord, my God, as my life was ebbing away, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came to you, into your holy temple. Those who worship vain idols forsake their true loyalty. But I, with the voice of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will pay. Deliverance belongs to the Lord. Then the Lord spoke to the fish, and it spewed Jonah out upon the dry land.
Well, good morning. I hope your hearts are open to the Lord to hear what God has to say this morning. So thank you, Tom, for that piece. I loved it. So I was thinking about getting into the story of Jonah, and we'll go through that this morning. And I was thinking back to the 90s when I was appointed to a church in Thurmont, Maryland. Now, what I didn't know when I first arrived at Thurmont was that the KKK was very active in the town of Thurmont. And so I arrived July 1st. And I began meeting with the local ministerium. The local clergy were getting together, and I went to their first meeting, and they were talking about this, that the, every year on Labor Day, which was the Monday, first Monday in September, the KKK would come into the town of Thurmont. They would bus KKK members into the town of Thurmont, and they would disperse out into the streets of downtown Thurmont, which is not really big, but across Main Street. And they would hand out literature recruiting members for the KKK. And the clergy had seen this happen year after year after year after year after year, and they were getting frustrated by it. And they wanted to do something about it, so we began to talk about it, and I listened to those discussions. And the first, it's interesting, because as we discussed this, how we were going to approach this, we started, you know, our first response was, let's go confront them. You know, let's go stand and let's give out different pamphlets, or let's go, you know, challenge them. Let's challenge them with our beliefs and what we think and things. And as we talked it through more and we talked through all the possible options and scenarios, we came to the conclusion that you don't fight hate with hate. That these people are fueled by hate, and the worst thing that we could do was actually go fuel that hate or counter with hate. So hate will not negate hate. We came to the conclusion the only way to counter hate in our world is to love. And so we didn't come up with a really good way to love them. But we did say, instead of confronting, we decided to become countercultural. So what we did on Labor Day is we decided to hold what we called a unity rally, calling the town together, calling to unity, calling all people of all walks of life to just come together. We had this big picnic. We had speakers. We had music. We just said, we want to focus. We want to be different than that. We want to be a town and a community that is unified across all those lines. So we held this rally. We held this opportunity. And the great thing was that we saw the bus came with the KKK members on it. And the only thing we did was made sure that we timed our rally at the same time they were going to show up in town so that they could see us. And 500 people showed up that day in a small town, in a rural town in America. And they saw the 500 of us gathered together just a few blocks down the street where they were going to drop their people off, and they never stopped. The bus just went right on through town and left. And they never came back another Labor Day after that. So we didn't confront them, but we did send a message that this is not going to, this is different. Our town is different. They saw the power of unity and the power of coming together and celebrating unity versus celebrating hate. Now, I actually share that because in the midst of that, I met a gentleman, his name was Mike, African-American male, Howard University student. He was doing a research project on racism in America. This is back 20 years ago. And he was doing this research project, and what he told us was that he had been having dinner with the Grand Dragon of the KKK. That part of his research, he had gone to the home. He had been going to the home more than once, and he was having dinner with the Grand Dragon, the leader of the KKK, which was just outside the town of Thurmond at this point in time, and having meals with him and sitting down with his family at the dinner table and just listening to his views in the context of saying, I'm doing a research project. And so he began to have build this relationship with the Grand Dragon of the KKK. How many of us would do that? How many of us would go have dinner with the person on the other end of the spectrum from us and listen? How many of us would do that? Not many, would we, right? Now you know how Jonah felt. That's exactly what God was asking Jonah to do. God was saying to Jonah, Jonah, I want you to go to the Ninevites. I want you to go to Nineveh, and I want you to go spend time with them and build a relationship with them. And Jonah was saying, I don't want to be around them. I don't want to be a part of what they're a part of. I don't want to just, you know, go in. I hate these people. Basically, Jonah hated the Ninevites. He despised the Ninevites, and he certainly didn't want them to discover God's mercy or God's grace. So he didn't want to go. He didn't want to go be with the people that he despised. So what does Jonah do? Well, I'm going to go through the whole story, not the whole story, but most of the story this morning with you very briefly. But what does he do? Verse 3, chapter 1, it says, but Jonah got up and went in the opposite direction in order to get away from the Lord. Like God has a geographic location. You know, that's what it surprised me. But he got up, and so what he does is he gets on a ship to Tarshish, and that is in the very opposite direction of Nineveh, and it is far away as he could possibly go from Nineveh. It's all the way across the Mediterranean Sea. So he's like, I'm out of here. And in fact, it's twice as far to Tarshish as it is to go to Nineveh. So that's how far he was trying to get. And he thinks, you know, I'm just going to get away from the Lord's presence, right? Now, we all kind of chuckle, right? We would never do that, would we? No, not us, right? We've got more sophisticated ways of running away from God. We don't geographically relocate. We just get busy. We just fill up our calendars with stuff, you know? That's what we do. And then when God's call comes, or when God asks us to do something hard, or God calls us to our Nineveh, we say, God, you know, I'd really love to go, but, you know, I'm just really busy this week. I got all these things to do. Look at my calendar. God, look how full it is. You know, I can't go. And it becomes just really an excuse to not do what God was asking us to do. So maybe the reason we don't even hear God's request is because we're too busy filling our calendars, so busy with all the things in our lives, we've overplanned and overscheduled our lives to the point where we can't hear God anymore. So two things could be happening. One, we can't hear God because we're too busy, or God is speaking and we don't listen because we're too busy. So our busyness can get in the way of what God may be asking to do, and maybe our calendars are our contemporary way of running away from God, getting as far away, and they're leading us further and further and further and further away from God. And we're becoming spiritually impoverished. We're becoming dirt poor when it comes to our spirits. So it's interesting because, you know, God, I don't know if you've ever had a discussion with God, but if God asks you to do something, I find that God usually doesn't take no for an answer. And so here's what happens next. So he gets on the ship. They're sailing across the Mediterranean Sea. And it says in the next verse, suddenly the Lord flung a powerful wind over the sea, causing a violent storm that threatened to send them to the bottom. So a lot of, again, in our sophisticated 21st century minds, we would never say that God caused a storm. But from Jonah's perspective, and you got to remember, Jonah's writing this after the event. So Jonah, in hindsight, is looking back at the storm and saying, you know, that storm was from God. God used that storm to get me back to Nineveh. God was going to use this event, these circumstances of my life, to turn me around. And we can relate to that, can't we? There are storms that come into our lives that kind of knock us off course, that come at us and they stop us in our tracks and make us rethink and reorder our calendars or our priorities or rethink where we're going or rethink our direction in life. There are storms in our lives that happen to us that get us to think differently. But Jonah's still not there yet. I mean, Jonah's in the ship and the storm has come and he's actually sleeping in the hold of the ship. And all the men on deck are freaking out. There's a storm coming, their lives are in danger, so they begin to pray to all their gods. Jonah, meanwhile, is not talking to God at all. He's sleeping in the hold. In fact, he doesn't even want to talk to God because he knows what God's going to say. You ever don't want to talk to God? There are times we don't want to talk to God because we know what God's going to tell us to do. So if I don't talk to God, God can't tell me, right? Remember, like your parents, you know, if I don't go talk to mom and dad, they can't tell me no, right? Or yes, or whatever it is I don't want to hear from them, I'll just avoid talking to them. So that's what Jonah's doing. So finally, they cast lots, which was a way of trying to discern what was going on in that time period. They cast lots, and it says that the lot fell to Jonah. So all the guys figure out Jonah's the problem here. So they go wake him up and they say, Jonah, what's going on? Why are you? And he's like, well, I've been running away from God. And they're like, what are you thinking, Jonah? Even the idol worshipers understand he shouldn't be doing this, you know? They get this. So they say, Jonah, what are we going to do? And so Jonah says to them, verse 12, he says, throw me into the sea. And of course, their reaction is like, we're not going to do that, Jonah. We're not going to throw you overboard. You're going to die. He's like, I'm telling you, you guys just need to chuck me overboard because if you do, things will be all right for you. And he convinces them to do that, and so he goes overboard. And this is like, so Jonah is not only avoiding God, running away from God, but now Jonah has actually just given up on life. Despair, he's just given up, totally given up. He's like, well, you know, he's actually just saying, just let me die. That'll surely cut off God's call in my life. That'll surely stop God from working in my life. And so he gives up. He wants to give up. He wants to give in. And so he's been running, and now he's resigning. And isn't that spiritual poverty? Isn't he? Jonah's just dirt poor spiritually. He's just been running away from God, ignoring God, avoiding God, and now he's just given up on life. I mean, you can't sink any lower than this spiritually. When the soul is crushed, when the soul gives up, that is like the worst, darkest place someone can be. It's a hard place to be. Maybe you're running away, avoiding, ignoring God today. Or maybe you've just given up on something. Or maybe you've given up on God's call or God's purpose for you. Well, I got good news for you this morning. You're blessed. You are blessed. Because as we were reminded last week, Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Because it's in our spiritual poverty, it's in that moment of weakness that God shows up. And so here you can imagine Jonah's flopping around in the sea. He's being drugged down by the seaweed. He's being overwhelmed by the waves. And God sends a great fish. Not a sign of God's displeasure, but a sign of God's deliverance from his running and his resignation. a sign of God's deliverance from his spiritual poverty. He doesn't know that at the moment. But this great fish comes, this whale comes, and if the plausible whale would have been the sperm whale, that swallows its prey whole in the Mediterranean Sea. So this whale comes and swallows Jonah up, and then Jonah finds himself where his travel plans have been canceled, right? His calendar has just gotten empty. His cell phone does not work where he is right now. He can't get a signal, right? He's in this dark place of silence and solitude. And it's in that darkness, it's in that silence, it's in that solitude that he begins to rethink his thoughts about God. You see, he had to get away from it all into that spot where he could actually hear from God, where he could actually turn his thought. And it says in the prayer that he turned his thoughts to the Lord. But he had to stop running. He had to be convinced, you know. So God had him in this dark place of silence and solitude. And that's where we heard that prayer this morning read. That was his prayer from that dark place. God was renewing him. He was recommitting his life to God's ways in his life. You know, many of you know, you've been around quite a while. I took a renewal leave sabbatical a few years ago, one summer. And I mentioned this before, and I'll just remind you and kind of just share with you part of that impact in my life. I was just busy. My calendar was full. I was doing lots of ministry, doing wonderful things. The church was doing good. The church still doing good. But I mean, the church, on the surface of things, family was good, church was good, ministry was good. But in my busyness, I could feel my relationship with God ebbing away, slipping away. And I said, I need to get away. I need some time to get away and to find renewal in my relationship with God. Not my renewal for ministry, but my renewal with God, my relationship with God. And I knew I needed to focus on that. So I asked for renewal leave, and the church was gracious enough to grant that leave to me and take care of my family during it. And then when I was on renewal leave, one of the things that, you know, some of you know that I did was I spent a week at a monastery. And it was a week of silence. Nobody talks to you, and you don't talk to anybody for a week. Silence. And then they gave me my own room. I had a single room, very Spartan. You know, we're not talking about hotel luxury. We're not talking about anything nice here. Just a Spartan room with a desk and a bed. And so I had solitude. I had silence, and I had solitude. I didn't have a cell phone. I didn't have a calendar. I didn't have any travel plans. It was interesting because through that experience, you know, some of us, we like go, I couldn't even last a day, Pastor. You know, I wouldn't make it, right? That's what you think. How many people think I would never survive, right? It's true. It's true. But I discovered something, and it's interesting because anybody remember how long Jonah was in the belly of the whale? How long? Anybody remember? According to the text? 3 days, right? How long was Jesus in the tomb? 3 days. It was interesting because it was on day 3 of my experience that God began to speak again into my life. It was on day 3 that I began to turn my thoughts back to God, and I had the presence of mind and the presence to turn my or reorient myself fully back to God. And it was then that God began to say some things to Matt and say, Matt, you know, here's what you got to work on. God, Matt, here's what I've called you to do. Matt, here's why you're here. And all those questions that we're always asking and never getting the answers to, I started to get them on day 3. Not on day 1, not on day 2, but 3 days of silence and solitude. 3 days in a place where I had no distractions. What I'm suggesting to us is there's power in getting away from all the stuff. There's power in becoming spiritually poor, because that's when God can speak into our lives and we can begin to know what our purpose for God is. But I think it's going to be hard to hear that in our busyness. So, you may have come asking this question, and I'll ask it. So what's God's purpose for you? What is God calling you to? Where is your Nineveh? Because Nineveh was not a place Jonah wanted to go. Nineveh represented those people that God was asking Jonah to go talk to that he despised, that he may have even hated. And he certainly didn't want them to know God's love for them. Jonah wanted to fuel his hate rather than expose them to God's mercy. He would rather be mad and angry than offer mercy to the people on the other side of the fence. So Jonah didn't want to go because the hard thing for Jonah was to think that God might actually love the people he hated. Where's your Nineveh? Where's that place that God is asking you to go that may be hard? Because it wasn't easy what God was asking for. It was hard. And your Nineveh and my Nineveh is that hard place that we know God wants us to go, but we keep running away. Remember, you can run, but you can't hide. Amen.